Today on Older and Wiser.
Do you still have a phone that plugs into the wall? A new survey reveals who's most likely to cut the cord.
And for cell phone users, we'll find out what kind of people are most likely to drop them on the ground.
Hey, does it bother you to eat alone? We've got some new facts on dining out by yourself.
Plus a few disgusting things you didn't know about passenger planes.
I'm Susan Sikora, along with Bob Bates.
And this is Older and Wiser. Hey, you know what? I remember the very first phone number we had when I was growing up in Indiana. Mm-hmm. It was TE90611.
Oh my God!
Do you remember your childhood phone number?
I think it was Long Branch 60164. See? Something like that. Yes, I know it was Long Branch 6. That was the exchange. I remember that. Yeah.
Those were the days when you had a telephone that plugged into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
A copper wire took your voice signal all the way back to the phone company, and it would connect it to other people, and you could make a call anywhere you wanted.
Right. And do you also remember party lines?
Party lines? Yeah, where you'd pick up the phone and there'd be somebody else there, right? And you'd have to apologize.
That was, yes. And of course, the thing you're supposed to do then is hang up, right?
Yeah, but you didn't.
Except,
you engaged them in conversation,
and
right?
And make sure they don't hear you breathing so you can hear what they're talking about.
Did you ask them questions? Try to start an interview?
No, they would know I was there.
Yeah, they didn't know you were there. Landlines are becoming a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Most of my friends do not have landlines.
Yeah, according to a new survey from Forbes, back in 2004, let's look at about 10 years ago, 90% of us had the kind of phone that plugs into the wall. Mm-hmm. And only 5% of households were cell phone only. 10 years have passed, and now less than 60% of American homes have a landline. Can you believe that?
I have my landline.
You have your landline? Why do you keep a landline?
For one thing, I like to know that it's always there. I'm always afraid that I'm going to forget to plug it in at night to charge the battery or something. And if I don't charge the battery, then I have to make a call. Oh, darn, I don't have the
nothing.
Juice.
You've got nothing. Well, there are several good reasons to have a landline. One, they say that in the event of a natural disaster, landlines will often work even when cell towers are down, when there's no power. You can still use your landline.
As you know, I'm originally from New Jersey, the Jersey Shore, and a lot of people there that I knew who had cell phones were lined up at trucks and various places to charge their phones because they didn't have a landline.
Right.
People who had a landline could still make calls.
Same thing happened during the earthquake of there in San Francisco in 89 when we were there, and our phones still worked, but there was no power for days.
Worked. if you've got a landline and you've got a cell phone, I don't think I'd want to be without either one at this
either
point.
One. Yeah.
I see a reason for both. I would never say, here's my cell phone, I'm just going to use a landline. I'm too used to having that cell phone.
The other reason
the road,
to keep
traveling around.
Well, and if you're older, it's also a security thing, because as you get older and you need to make an emergency call to 911 for an ambulance or something, if you just pick up the phone and call 911, they know immediately where you are. They identify you by that number. But if you're calling on your cell phone, they can't do that. They don't know where you are. They have
or
to
also
get
if you're out driving and
you have to
describe
your
car breaks down.
Well, that's good. I mean, you got to have the cell phone. But I'm saying that if you're incapacitated in some way and you can't describe your location, just picking up your own landline will tell the 911 folks where you're located.
Okay. So the landline does that. Not
the landline does that. Cell phone does not. You're going to have to be prepared to say, give them your address and tell them where to come if you're using your cell phone only.
Okay. Well, I see reasons for both.
One of the downsides of a landline, I got to say, is we have been inundated by telemarketers. And even though we're on the do not call list, all day long, the phone just rings. So at this point, I'm really tempted to cut the line because of the telemarketers. And I don't know what to do about it.
Is that because you put that particular phone number in when you, let's say, sign up for something or show an interest or sign up for a newsletter or buy something online?
I don't know how they get it, although I believe it's as simple as the phone book. If you have a listed phone number in the phone book, you're an open target for telemarketers.
The phone book. Now, there's something that ought to go away.
Oh, the phone book. Yeah, yeah. Oh, why have a paper phone book?
How many
book
doorstops
anymore?
Do we need?
I know. That's a terrible waste of paper. And I'm sure it's about to go. But boy, it still exists. Hard to believe. Hard
and
to
they
believe.
Think you need one every year. I mean, can't you update it in a couple of years? Seriously.
I do remember, though, the first time my name was actually listed in the phone book with my phone number, you know, when I was getting my first apartment, I was quite excited.
Yeah,
it was a big deal. I was probably 22 or something.
Well, good.
And the new phone books came out, and I was like Steve Martin in The Jerk. You know, the new phone books are here. The new phone books are here. And I looked myself up, and there I was in black and white with my phone number, and I was quite proud.
This just turns into something I have to put in my recycle bin.
Okay, moving on to another survey, and we warn you that this one is actually conducted by Verizon. So take it with a grain of salt. Don't know how accurate it is, or what perhaps the reason, there may be reasons why they did this survey, who knows, but they tell us that according to their research, 50% of mobile phone owners in the U.S. have lost or broken their devices at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a phone these days, very expensive. I mean, the actual retail price for a smartphone is anywhere from $300 to $800. Everybody's got one. So I don't know what happens to folks who can't afford to have that phone repaired or replaced if they're running walking around town with a $500 piece of equipment in their pocket.
Not only that, but if you've got something and it's broken, until you can get it fixed or take it somewhere or replace it, what do you do in the meantime if you don't have that landline?
Well, that's true. I have seen a lot of folks using their iPhones with broken screens. If you ever stand in an elevator and you see people, you know, using their phones, I'll tell you, very often their screens are broken. So I think you just go ahead and live with it. You look at your pictures through broken screens.
Well, I guess if it can function, I guess you do, as long as it won't cut your finger or anything like that.
According to this survey, 43% of mobile phone owners have broken their devices by dropping them into water. 43% of them by sending the device through the wash. Ooh, real boy. Listen,
you can leave things in your. How many times do you leave Kleenex in a pocket?
Do that once.
Kleenex
though.
Is a pain in the neck and it's messy, but if you leave your cell phone in there, by the time you figure it out, too late.
That's not something you do more than one time, though.
No, well,
I mean, you do that.
But it's expensive.
It's expensive. You that's not a mistake you make more than once. 22% of owners have broken their devices by throwing them. Why would you do that?
I don't think I'd throw anything that costs that much.
No. 20% by dropping them out of a window. Why are you hanging out of a window?
Maybe you're angry at who called.
I guess.
Who's calling you?
About 20% have been chewed up by their pets as well. Yeah, I mean, I guess the purpose of their survey was to prove to potential customers that they need the insurance you can buy separately.
Well, maybe. I mean, you'd wonder also how many people would drop them, like even in a toilet. I mean, that's not probably
I hate to
have your phone in your pocket
That's what I'm saying. That's it. That's how you do it.
The wrong way for the phone.
If you have, I don't want to describe this too graphically, but if you have your phone in your pants pocket, in your rear pants pocket, and you've sat down to do your thing, okay? And then you get up, and the phone in any way has come dislodged as you are pulling up your pants. There is that moment when you could very easily lose your phone into the toilet.
Well, I dropped a phone out of my pocket just getting out of the car, and I couldn't figure out what I did with it. And it was because the pocket that was in this particular jacket I had on was more shallow than another pocket in another jacket.
Uh-huh.
And luckily, I retraced my steps soon enough. Had I waited, had it rained, had it fallen on the ground and it got wet, I'd be out of luck. So,
most people today, or I think, I don't know if this is true or not. In fact, it may not be true, but I certainly have a case on my phone. I have a rubberized hunk of rubber around it so that it's easy to grip, and also if it drops, it bounces a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody needs that.
I think those people who have a smartphone would do that, but
it ruins the look of
needs to be a little more protective, even.
Yeah.
And by the way, I hate to say this and be too girly here or sexist, but it needs to be cute. Seriously. I see. It's like the computers, you know, the desktops. I mean, even if you go buy a desktop, which a lot of people are not buying anymore, but even the laptops, you know, finally we've got some colors. We're still talking primary colors in most cases.
All right. Moving on. Here's the headline. Do you hate to eat alone? And this is a survey saying that 58% of people in the U.S. regularly eat on their own. Another survey from Kelton Research, a national polling firm, says that 3 out of 4 Americans take their meals alone at least occasionally.
Hmm. You're talking about eating in a restaurant.
I think
or
this
at
is what they're talking about because you know the numbers would be much higher, obviously, if we're eating at home. People eat at home by themselves all the time.
Try to get the family to sit down and have a dinner.
Yeah, this would be going out to lunch by yourself, going out to dinner at a restaurant by yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've done it. I do it if I have to, but mm-hmm. I don't like it. What do you do?
If you're sitting at a counter and you're looking at the food prep area or something, that's one thing. You're not looking at everybody. If you're sitting at a table, I think that makes a difference.
I don't like to go into a restaurant and ask for a table for one. Mm. They always put you over in the corner and you're sitting there alone looking out sadly at all the other people dining with their friends.
Oh, see, I don't think it's
and then you
special.
Feel like I'm all alone.
Oh, my God. Cry me a river. Are you kidding me? Listen, I think for me, I wouldn't go to a restaurant by myself. I mean, it's not that I wouldn't go. I just, it's not something that I would embrace because part of the experience of having a meal or sharing a meal is to share it with people and also to have the conversation.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to have a meal alone or if I want something from a particular restaurant, I'd just as soon pick it up, take it home, put my pajamas on, pour my glass of wine and sit down.
Eat it at home. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
If you're going to have to eat by yourself, you just as soon do it in the privacy of your own home. I guess one of the advantages of cell phones today is that you can take your cell phone into a restaurant and sort of like scroll through your email or read the news or
look busy
at
least.
And engaged
and wanted.
Is it less problematic for people in Europe to eat alone? You picture the those outdoor dining, those outdoor restaurants in Paris where people mm-hmm. like to order dinner and have dinner by themselves. And it's absolutely appropriate to sit there and watch mm-hmm. The people go by and have dinner by yourself.
I think outdoors changes it. That's another thing.
Mm.
I think the outdoor factor changes it. I think if you sit outside, even in this country, if there's a small, the tables are not as huge. They're usually smaller, they're a little more bistro-like. And you can sit there, have a cup of coffee. And I think it might be a more comfortable situation for people who are dining or eating or drinking alone mm-hmm. as opposed to people inside a restaurant.
Perhaps,
it sort of
looks
like you should be here with
you're not quite in there. You're right. You're not quite putting yourself into the restaurant, you're kind of on the outskirts and it's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's okay to be out there kind of looking around and observing people too.
There is a woman by the name of Susan Cain. She founded an organization called Quiet Revolution, which it says here, it is designed to celebrate introverts. I love that. Celebrate introverts. And she says,
have any left?
She says there's a new trend of restaurants, particularly in Europe, that are designed for dining alone.
Hmm. So do they have like tables for one?
The larger tables. You know how though, if you're a table for one, they'll often put you at a table that's so small you can barely, have room to put your plate and your glass. You know, it's almost as though they're trying to not give you too much real estate in the restaurant.
Well, if you tip them well at the end, they'll be sorry because you won't be back.
That's absolutely
I
true.
I wouldn't be. And by the way, when you pick up the order at the restaurant and you pay the bill, you save the tip.
Oh, interesting. There's a restaurant called, and I don't know how to say this in French. Maybe you do. Le Pain Quotidien? I don't know how to say that. It's a restaurant chain that has large tables aimed at solo diners. So they really are encouraging you to come by yourself and enjoy
spread
it.
and spread out
have
bring
a little
your coloring
room.
Book for de-stressing, bring your flat screen phone or your smartphone.
Oh God, that's a whole that's like the folks who park themselves in Starbucks all day and turn it into their mobile office. I'm not sure that's the way to go either.
Well, yeah, but that's how Harry Potter was written.
No. Is that true?
Oh, yes.
J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter in a coffee shop.
The story is legendary because she was really at the end of her financial rope, as I recall. I think she was a single mom at the time. I'm not sure. But she would go to Harry, and she said she sat there because she got more done. She felt like, I think she was around people. The atmosphere somehow sparked her creativity. They allowed her to sit there and nurse a cup of coffee or get a refill, and that's where she wrote at least the first one, anyway. First Harry Potter.
Fascinating. Well, she certainly got her money back, right? On those lattes. All right, moving on. Interesting item in the Daily Mail. A former airline employee by the name of Allison Hope, and I'm not sure what airline she works for. I think they have kept us from knowing.
I'm sure they have.
Yeah, they have deleted the name of the airline, but for example, you know, you always like to order a cup of coffee or a cup of tea on the plane, and you think that's very relaxing. But she says, not a good idea, because the device that they use to heat the water, it's a big vat of some sort that's very difficult to clean. So it can get kind of disgusting in there, but they continue to reheat water in it. So your tea could have junk in it you don't even know what it is.
Well, now, what kind of junk? I mean, if they're just heating water and hot water is there, wouldn't that sort of be almost a self-cleaning situation?
It could be. Seems like they need to clean it regularly is what I'm saying. And also, she tells us that your tray tables, really, you should bring antibacterial wipes to wipe off your own tray table because they don't do it between each flight. I assumed that the area that I'm sitting in has been disinfected by some cleaning crew before I sit in it.
You're assuming a lot.
I was wrong. They do not.
Well, see, that one disturbs me, because the tray table, you figure, would be a clean surface. Nope. You would hope it is. They're going to serve you your food. At least your food is going to be on a plate, and that plate is going to be on the tray. And you would hope that that is going to be clean. And
it
isn't. A morsel of food falls onto the tray, can you pick it up and put it in your mouth?
Don't do
leave
it.
Yeah, you leave it.
She says that passengers often use their trays as their own private diaper changing table. So if you've got, imagine, you know, you hear a crying baby and baby's diapers got to be changed. People often discreetly change those diapers right there in the seat. They don't always take them to the bathroom and try to change the diaper.
Okay, now it doesn't matter now about the tray table because my appetite's gone. I'm not even eating.
The other thing you might not know, she says, is that passengers often die while the plane is en route to some destination.
Oh,
happens
that's
all
not
the
cheerful.
Time. People have heart attacks. I guess this makes sense. Happens on cruise ships as well, I know. But obviously the person who dies has to stay propped up in that seat for the remainder of the trip. So let's say
not if he or she is sitting next to me.
Why? What would you do if
I would?
Died?
I think I would say something, and then ask at least to move my seat because clearly that person can't move.
Oh, right.
I mean,
I'm sure
something
that
should happen. I don't want to sit next to somebody who's just passed.
Who's passed? I think you could probably move away if there was another seat on the plane for you to move to. But nonetheless, the person is dead in the seat. So happens all the time. And what they do actually switch out the bottom cushion of the seat when something bad has happened in that seat. So, and theoretically, they clean those cushions and put them,
that
back.
That cushion should be deep sixed because that, you know, well, we all know when you die, guess what?
Yeah.
Everything kind of lets loose.
Yeah, it does. And it can be kind of messy. The other thing that people don't realize is that the floors of the plane, the carpeted floors, seldom get shampooed or steam cleaned. So you should not walk around the plane without your shoes on because those floors can be kind of disgusting. And listen, there's people get air sick and things can happen and food is spilled on the floor. There's all kinds of stuff on the floor. So I've often thought about my carry-on bag that I slip under the seat and what might be on the floor touching my carry-on bag. You know?
And this is the kind of thing where I guess when you get the bag, at least, I don't know, in the car, before you put it in the car or at least out of the car, and then before you bring it in the house, maybe you should wipe it down.
Absolutely. That's a point that she makes in this article, is that when you get home from your trip, And you're tempted to just take your bag and put it on the bed, right? And open it up and unload it and all that. You really should take some wipes and wipe the whole bag down.
You're right. Any kind of bacteria that might have been picked up could come into your home.
I've always wondered about this, too. You know how they often give you, on a long flight in particular, they'll give you a blanket. And she reveals in this article that most airlines only launder those blankets once a week.
Mm-hmm. I've heard this before.
So in between flights,
they've talked about a lot. Yeah.
Right, flight to flight, they just fold them up and redistribute them.
Yeah, and if they feel soft and cozy and you're cold, you're not going to give it a second thought. You're just so glad to have the blanket.
Right.
But, and I've used a blanket here and there in the past, but I try not to now. And I mean, if I'm cold, I'll just take my coat out if it's in the overhead or what have you and put it over me.
Yeah.
Or in the summer, even if you're traveling, it's a good argument to travel at least with a light sweater, something that's big enough that if you're cold and the air conditioning is really pumped up and going full blast, you've got something to keep yourself warm and you know where it's been.
You know, when you lean back against the headrest and it's all fabric, right?
Well, yes.
Somebody has just spent a 6-hour flight leaning against the very same headrest you just leaned against. Now, what if they have head lice?
I was just going to say, look at the head lice situation that you hear about so many times now. I mean,
I'm sure
it happens on planes as well. So, yeah, that's a problem, too.
Are we worrying too much? Is there something to be said for worrying a little bit less?
You think about this, you do what you can, and then after a while, you just have to say, I have done what I can.
I like that theory. I have done what I can, and let it go. Let it go.
Let it go.
All right, Susan Sikora, what a great time talking to you again today. Thanks for being here.
Watch out for those phone books.
I know. No more phone books for me. Waste of paper. It's a waste of paper.
Okay.
All right. We'll see you next time. And for those of you who follow us on olderandwiser.com, be sure and check in every day. We've always got new stories, and follow our celebrities who are tweeting there as well. So check us out at olderandwiser.com. We'll see you next time.